Man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shape.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the point
in?
Of order.
Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. My guests this week are Bongiwonke Wawashoba, Sunday Times Politics Editor, as well as Andisiwe Makinana, who's our political correspondent. She's talking to us all the way from Cape Town, as well as our political journalist, Umawande Amashabalala. Welcome to Politics Weekly, folks. We start this week's chat by looking at the system of coalition governments, which has caused much instability in many of our major cities. Remembering, of course, that we'll be having local authority elections again next year. Shoba, I'd like for you to come in here first, you know, on this. And under what circumstances do we have coalition governments? Why do we even bother having coalition governments?
In our context, we put coalition governments in instances where we had hung municipalities, and it's also a sign that the ruling party's dominance is really dwindling. So now they need these smaller parties for them to put together these coalition governments. It's also a sign that ours is also a very young democracy, but Mike, we are really not used to this kind of arrangements in government. And we got a taste of that in 2016, at a bigger scale, when the ruling party failed to get these majorities in these metros. So they had no choice but to parties to get together. And sort of find an arrangement of trying to work together in order for these governments to work, because they couldn't do it on their own. That's where we are right now. Mm.
But they are not based on, if they have to do that, presumably they have to have trade-offs. In other words, to say, I give you this and you give me that, and then, you know, we can work together kind of thing. So they don't sound to me, and you can correct me, like, you know, alliances of principle.
Of course, they are not. Ours are not alliances of principle. They are not based on any principle, and they are not arranged with the interest of the people at the center. They are just marriages of convenience. And if you look, even if you look at the demands that were being made by some of these kingmakers. For instance, Julius Malema called the press briefing in Alex, where he made demands to political parties. And some of those demands included Zuma must step down, the ANC must process the expropriation of land, that compensation. Some of these demands are really not at the center of service delivery, or they are not meant to serve those communities that are there in those areas. Some of them are just personal, and it tells you the nature of those arrangements, that even if they get into them, the reason why they don't last in most cases is because it's not based on any principle or anything that is meant to improve service delivery for our people.
Mm-hmm. Now the places that come to mind, you know, that have been affected by this would be Joburg, Tshwane, and maybe quite dramatically Nelson Mandela Bay.
It's been a circus in all those metros that you've just mentioned, Bramike. Johannesburg, Herman Mashaba came in, and he was fighting from day one. There were allegations of people trying to sabotage him because they wanted to get rid of him. The ANC was not happy with that arrangement, and there was more chaos in Tshwane. Because I'm a citizen of Tshwane, I saw the chaos happening and how it impacts on service delivery. For an example, there were suddenly potholes that were not being fixed. Suddenly, traffic lights that will be out of order for days, something that never used to happen. And it shows you that instead of really governing, the people who were in charge were busy fighting off the other side. And there's been motion of confidence after the other. And the same in Nelson Mandela Bay, they've changed mayors and even right now they have not really resolved their leadership squabble situation. So it has been that kind of an arrangement where there's just been chaos after chaos.
Yeah, and I want you to come in here. Ushoba says that we are likely to see more because of what is happening with the majority of the ANC's majority, you know, in many places. We like to see more coalitions going forward, keeping in mind next year's elections. Do you agree with that view?
Well, I do, Pramaik, agree with that view. By the look of things, everything indicates that a coalition seems to be the future in this country. In fact, I dare say that it may well happen in 2024 as well at national government, that we may be governed by a coalition government, given the challenges that are facing the governing party, which is the ANC currently. But it is, undesirable, Pramaik, for us to head towards that direction. If what we've seen in the past 4 years since 2016 in these metros that you mentioned is anything to go by, because in the main, service delivery completely stopped, you know, and sometimes, as they say, it's better the devil you know than the one that you don't. And coalition governments, it would seem, are a very unpredictable devil if what we have seen in the past 4 years is anything to go by. So it's unfortunate that, unfortunately, that's the direction we're heading. I guess what ought to happen is for the country to find a model that works, like a legislative framework that governs coalition governments differently to an outright majority by one individual party. Because if you use the same framework of an outright majority by one party when there's multiple parties with different ideologies, different interests, I think it becomes quite chaotic, as we have seen in the past 4 years.
Yeah. And Sibe, you know what, before we go on before we take a break, I want you to give us the view from Cape Town, because Cape Town has not had the as severe a political challenge as the other cities, the other metros. What has been your experience in Cape Town in the context that we're discussing?
Look, I mean, I think Cape Town was the first metro actually to have a coalition government. Yeah. If you look back in 2006, when Helen Zille first became mayor of Cape Town, they didn't have an outright majority as the DA. They had a coalition of a number of small political parties. Of course, there was a lot of clashes, but in the end, they managed to sustain that coalition until 2011, when the DA got a majority. So it was one of those rare cases where a coalition does hold, at least for a full term of an administration. If I can also draw you to another very small municipality in the Western Cape, people don't know about this. There is a municipality called Kanaland, where both the DA and the ANC snubbed their political bosses and form a coalition. That was in August 2016. And guess what? That coalition still stands. We have a municipality in South Africa that is governed by an ANC NDA coalition. And the funniest thing is, both people from both sides will tell you off the record how much functional is that coalition. They will never go on the record. Off the record, they will tell you it's the best coalition they've had, because each party is each other, is taking each other into account. So you've got a situation where the mayor and deputy mayor are from the ANC, and the speaker and the majority of the mayor is DA. So they're at each other's neck, watching each other's step. And at the end of the day, we hear that service delivery has improved compared to pre-2016. We hear that community is much happier now than it was 4 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very interesting perspective, you know. But so in some instances, you know, you can have total chaos, like in Nelson Mandela Bay and Tshwane. And in some other instances, you can have, a modicum of normality and order. But let's take a break here. When we come back, we go to South Africa's longest running political story, the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture.
Would I buy a Haval?
But you see, like, you can't beat the diesel.
I'll take the petrol over the diesel any day.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
Welcome back to Sunday Times Politics Weekly. It seems there is never a dull moment at the Zondo Commission. The person who watches the commission for us is, of course, Mawande Amashabalala. Mawande, we spoke with you earlier on in another context, but you have been spending much of your time following developments at the commission. This week we had two interesting witnesses.
Yes, Pramay. Indeed, the South Africa's longest political story. No, Pramay, the commission continues to show us interesting revelations. This week, as we know, it is wrapping up a testimony that relates to South African Airways and the events that took place during the past 10 years or so. And as you say, earlier on in the week, we had the former board member and the former board chairperson of South African Airways Technical, as well as a chairperson of the audit committee of SAA, Usisiyake Kwinana, who was testifying about alleged wrongs that took place during that time. And I dare say that it was one of the most interesting testimonies overall in this commission, how that particular testimony unfolded. And as the week progressed, the big elephant in the room as it relates to SAA, the former chairperson of the board, Tutumiani, took over the stand. Also, bringing us a new element that we haven't seen in the commission by refusing to answer most of the questions, invoking the privilege that she has of not self-incriminating herself. But it's quite interesting how she invokes that privilege, because she only invokes it as it relates to certain questions, and she feels the need to answer certain questions that don't necessarily relate to her, but where that give her a chance to deflect. For instance, there was a time where she was blaming the collapse of SAA to Coleman Andrews. So remember, Coleman Andrews was the chief executive in the late 90s to the early 2000. There's a whole story around him selling the fleet of SAA and the controversial golden handshake that he left with. Tutumiani was quite comfortable talking extensively about those issues because it paints a picture that she had nothing to do with the wrongs, although some of the wrongs that might have happened under her, it was long after Coleman Andrews. So I found that to be quite opportunistic, and I say her strategy so far, it seems to have been working for her. I don't know what is the strategy, but it would seem that it's to stay out of trouble, at least as it relates to the commission, although I doubt that that is what it will ultimately achieve, because if you behave in that manner, what I foresee is that there will be an adverse finding against her character, regardless of the testimony that she gives, because the other disadvantage to her by refusing to answer to the testimony of those that have implicated her is that it leaves that testimony untested, and it leaves it as the only fact that will be before the chairperson when he compiles his report. Therefore, I doubt that it is a smart strategy. She may think it is smart, but in the long term, I think she may live to regret the stance that she took.
Dudumeen in particular is very interesting, you know, as a personality, because she is almost as famous as some of the cabinet ministers who have been referred to or top government officials, and yet she's never been in government, has she?
Yeah, no, no, she is. I mean, in fact, Bramaga, I would say she's more famous than most of the ministers. I guess it really has to do with the character that she is, the events that took place at SAA. We know that the crisis that SAA is in now after her reign in the past few years or so, starting in 2012 up to about 2017, during her tenure. We know everything that took place at SAA, and SAA being a critical state-owned company that it is, and also then her association with the former president at the time, Jacob Zuma, is what elevates her status to what it is. So she is indeed quite an interesting character, and it would remain to be seen how her story unfolds going forward. Because remember, there was also the judgment by the High Court early this year that she is a delinquent director, and then part of the judgment was saying that the NPA must look into the affairs that took place at SAA during her tenure and see if there are no opportunities to pursue a criminal charge, which I think is something that we will likely unfold post her testimony at the inquiry. So her story and her prominence in the South African body politic is far from over as things stand.
And then do we know who's appearing next week of interest?
So as we know that, the following weeks will be the final lap of the commission in its lifespan. The chairperson has been quite emphatic even this week that the intention is still to conclude the oral hearings by the end of this year, which gives the commission a lifespan of, a remainder of about 5 to 6 weeks to conclude those oral hearings. So I guess the following week, starting from next week, it will be a conclusion of all the evidences that have been led in regards to different government institutions, SOEs. So maybe they will conclude Transnet, maybe ESCOM, maybe, government departments. But I guess the following weeks is just wrapping up all the aspects of testimonies that were not concluded up to this date.
Anselme, do you want to come in here? Because the three of you are seasoned political watchers and observers. What's your view? Do you think that if someone were to ask you, so far, coming out of the Zondo Commission, what have we benefited? What would you say based on, all the evidence that has been tabled before the Deputy Chief Justice?
Okay, I will just maybe comment based on the witness that is currently appearing before the Commission as we speak. And, her reluctance to cooperate while insisting that she's cooperating proves everything that we've been writing as the media past few years, everything that opposition parties have been saying about him. So it shows the public, because while on the other hand, the media and maybe certain people from certain factions are being accused of having driven a certain narrative, what Ms. Nguyen is doing, because she's refused to account when she was in the board, she would go to parliament. She would not go to parliament when the board is invited and send a sick note or have one or other reasons for not accounting. Or she would just show up alone when the entire board is expected to appear before a committee of parliament. She always played these tricks. And we reported on these things, on how she bullied her colleagues and so on. But now I like that she's doing it for everybody to see. So I think that what has been happening over the past few months or the past few years of this commission, I mean, from a lot of people say it's just a talk show, there's no evidence. I don't know what kind of evidence were people hoping to get out of the commission. But for me, it has confirmed a lot of what the media has been reporting, because a lot of people do say the media is quite a significant political player in South Africa. So I think while nobody is in jail after all these years and after, spending 700 million on the commission, but I think it has sort of affirmed us and confirmed a lot of things that we were suspicious of.
And Shoba, what's your take?
I think that the commission has really assisted us in understanding that how deep in trouble as a society we are. It has exposed and lifted a veil on a lot of wrongdoing that we were suspecting, and we didn't have proof of some of those things. And it seems as if we are on the right track in dealing with those with such problems. And you see with what happened with Saudi, that the relationship that has been formed between the commission and the NPA is really assisting us in dealing and acting on these issues now that because they waited for Saudi to go there to the commission, and after it was all laid bare, the rot that he was involved in, then he was arrested. And we are hoping that it happens to more and more of these witnesses, including these ones who appeared this week.
Yeah. And Mawande, you'll be keeping an eye on the proceedings there for us. Now, for our third story of the week of diplomats at war. Andisiwe, where does this story come from? Why do we end up having our diplomats having a fight in a foreign country?
Yeah, it's a very interesting story because I picked it up in Parliament, right? And for me, what stood out was how emphatic ANC MPs were in terms of what should be done next. I recall the senior official who is allegedly sabotaging the Consul General. ANC MPs never called for Dudumyeni to be recalled at any point. They've never called for anyone appointed in any position. It didn't matter how bad things were in a department and so on. So that piqued my interest. And first phone call I make to sources, they say, no, man, the opposite of what was discussed in Parliament is actually true. So I don't know. I also don't feel like maybe as the media, we don't pay that much attention in what happens at the core and obviously by extension at these missions. Because following our story, I've had a few people saying, you guys need to look into this terrain. It's sort of, you know, disregarded, and a lot of wrongdoing does go on there.
Yeah. Sure, but just if you give us like very briefly, crisply, what the fight is about in the LA consular office.
It's a very complicated story, Bramike. We had to focus on one aspect of the fight, but if you look into the correspondence that we had sight of, the fight is deeper. It's deeper than just someone failing to find accommodation. It has to do with the kind of person of personalities that we are dealing with. I think that we are dealing with personality, a story of a personality clash somehow. We know Sunduza, the people who have interacted her know her know her character. She is she's a very interesting character who other people who have worked with her label her bully because of the way she behaves, because of the demands that she makes, and all of that is captured in those correspondences that we have seen. But also the official that she is fighting with is, you can tell by the tone and the language that is being used in the letter that he as well is as a special character and it's someone who doesn't take a fight lying down. It's someone who's confrontational and I think that at the center of this of this story is also the clash of those two characters.
Yeah. Let's hope that eventually they are able to find permanent accommodation for her so that we have less drama and a greater focus on the reason in the first place why she is in L.A. and why we have a consulate in L.A. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for this week on Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. I'd like to thank my guests, Andisiwe Makinana, political correspondent, talking to us from Cape Town, and in Joburg, political journalist Mawande Amashabalala, together, of course, with political editor Sibongakonke Shoba. And by the way, you can catch our podcast on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. I'm Mike Siluma, signing off.